This is Radiolab. I'm Jad.
And I'm Robert.
Today on our show... laughter.
And I want to say one more thing about this. We've talked about how laughter is evolutionarily sort of wired in. We've talked about that it's a social thing.
A safety, all clear kind of situation.
Yeah, but it's another level of safety that's kind of fascinating. Let me tell you a really classic and not well-known story. It involves the television show The Nanny. Remember in the 90s, Fran Drescher had this very big hit TV comedy series?
You
will probably remember the voice of the nanny.
Hello?
That's Fran.
Ma, how did you find me here? Well, what's the emergency? Ma, Mike Douglas isn't on Channel 4 because they canceled him 22 years ago.
And the story actually is not so much about Fran Drescher as it is about... You hear those people laughing right underneath?
Yeah, all constantly.
Yes, well, this is about Fran's laughers. It's a story of the nanny laughers. And it begins with a woman named Lisette St. Clair.
Just FYI, my name is pronounced Lisette.
She's a casting director at Central Casting in Los Angeles.
Central Casting is the oldest extras casting company. It's been around for years and years and years. Back in the day where people used to line up outside the studios and the productions would come out and pick you.
She actually got her start as an extra.
My first gig, I think it was called The Big House, and I had to jump out of a coffin, but I was a hooker. I was a hooker out of a coffin.
Anyway, after years as working as an extra, Lisette decided to jump to the other side of the business and be the person in charge of casting the extras.
You know, you're on the phone and production company calls and says, you know, I need 3 strippers, 2 nurses, and 4 doctors. And so that's what we do. We find them.
Now, here's some more background that you will need. In 1985, which is years before The Nanny, Fran Drescher had been raped during a break-in at her apartment. And later she wrote about this experience, and she spoke about it publicly.
That night was the night that changed everything.
This is Fran reading from her book, Cancer's Schmancer.
2 men with guns broke into our home and raped both me and my girlfriend Judy, who had the misfortune of having joined us for dinner. We were never the same again.
The people who did this to her were caught and locked up. And then things got worse. As her fame grew, she started getting stalked. And this was right around the time that filming began on The Nanny. And the thing about the filming The Nanny, when it's filmed live, as they say, you know, in front of a live studio audience, pretty much anybody can come into the theater. So Fran worried that someone who might mean harm would come in and sit there during the show. So she and the show's producers decided to do the only thing they could do, get rid of the audience. Just kick them all out. Now, this was right in the middle of the season. They had a taping to do the very next day.
No matter how hard things became in our personal life, the show must go on.
So they called up Lisette.
They decided instead of having an audience come in, just have people from Central Casting that they know.
And she said, all right, I'll fill your audience with extras.
I was looking for about 30 or 40 people.
She had thousands of people to choose from. And there were all kinds of categories available to her.
You could do a search in the database, you know, height,
there was age,
ethnicity,
skin color,
weight, dress size,
eye color,
you know, hair color. You could put that all in and it'll bring up what you need.
She needed a safe audience.
You know, just normal, lively people.
That she could screen. And while she was at it, she thought, well, why don't I get people who are good laughers? I mean, why not?
Yeah.
So, with 24 hours to go, she put out a rather strange request.
I put it out on the sequencer. It's like a work line, a hotline that people listen to. And if they fit, or if they think they fit, then they'll call in. And I said, hi, this is Lisette, and I'm looking for some people that have good laughs to work on The Nanny tomorrow.
And when they call, she'd begin with one question.
Hi, my name is A. Donnie Mitchell.
Okay, let me hear you laugh.
Yeah, okay.
Hi, my name is Pam West.
Let me hear you laugh.
Hi, my name is Kim January.
Like you just saw the funniest thing. Let me hear you laugh.
My name is Dennis Feiler.
I was at the laundromat.
She answered the phone right away. She goes, let's hear it. And everybody in the laundromat looked at me, and I said, it's an audition, it's an audition. She said, laugh right now. I said, ha, ha,
ha, ha, ha, ha, ha, ha, ha, ha. These were people that were calling it that were like, all ethnicities, all ages, 20-something to like 70-something. I had married couples. And it's not a show like Baywatch where everybody has to look, you know, bikini ready and all that.
Which means like they weren't going to win a beauty contest, but they could get to the studio and sit down and laugh.
There were certain things that we were laughing at, and they would come to us and say, okay, we don't want you to laugh at that. We knew when to laugh and when not to laugh, and then it got to the part where we just knew exactly what to do.
Can you think of anything more wonderful than sitting in a comfortable chair all day long and being amused?
People look puzzled. What do you mean, a laugher?
So how much did you pay them?
Back then, it was like $75.
And you get paid? Yeah, we get paid for laughing. What a thing to do. I
mean, well, Lizette got a bunch of the laughers in a room together just to show us how it works.
Okay, so this is like a little, kind of like a murmur chuckle. Just, it's not like a gut-wrenching, just a little bit of murmur chuckle. Okay, something just funny just happened, but it's not like a whole big long laugh. It's just something really quick and funny. And this one, something's happening, and it's like a little bit of chuckle, but then just something came out of it, just making it pee in your pants.
And we all have our great individual laughs, but we were told not to stand out. So we had to know each other, play off each other, and if somebody was like paused in their laughter, maybe we'd cover it. I mean, we were a well-timed, orchestrated machine.
Yeah, we were.
So well orchestrated that their services became very desirable.
It's just, you know, a chain reaction.
Central Casting began getting calls from other sitcoms.
On Drew Carey's show.
From talk shows.
They sprinkled us in the audience.
And something odd began to happen on the sets. The actors began noticing the laughers.
They would thank us, want to know if we are right, did we have enough food, was the food good, you know.
And for a lot of these people who were used to working as extras and being pretty much ignored all the time, this was wonderful.
They treated us as though we were principal, family. I mean, they recognize us at Christmas parties, and it's just like we were a part of them.
They would come and sit with them and talk to us. You know, they appreciated us.
So that's the part I love.
Because, you know, we got their back. Yeah, and we did have their back.
There was a time we stayed after, and it was a scene where the nanny was climbing a telephone pole outside, and she wanted us to come out there and do our thing, so that the timing was right and felt right. And I think we went on 14 hours that night. It was wonderful.
It is. And, you know, I almost want to cry because everybody's so wonderful as a family here. It's laughers.
And then reality struck.
Who will win the battle for $250,000?
I'm feeling a pure disgust with Trisha.
I'm going to have to nominate George and Erica.
Starting around 2000, reality TV, you know these shows, and there are no laughs required, they pushed sitcoms aside. And professional laughing work slowed down to a trickle.
When we're laughing 3 times a week on different shows, there is like this momentum and this adrenaline, and suddenly it all comes to an end. And it's like, honest to God, it's like going through withdrawal.
I found that when I'm not laughing, I'm a lot more depressed. And I found that... I found that it was great therapy for me on a weekly basis.
I miss it.
Oh, God. So anyway, I miss it.
It's sad.
Anybody out there needs any laughers? There's a whole room full of us.
Well, look, we could use you. We could use you. Look, Chad, go with me here. What is brown and sticky?
What?
A stick. Thank you. And Jeff?
Yes?
I had Cheerios for breakfast this morning. This is mowing in high grass. And Jad?
Yes?
I'm wearing brown shoes. This is fun. You're all hired. This story was produced by Rob Christensen and reported by Mary Beth Kirshner. Support provided by the Dana Alliance for Brain Initiatives at dana.org, and the excerpt from Fran Drescher's book Cancer Schmancer was courtesy of Hachette Audio. Our laughers interviewed were
Diva Perry,
Bonnie Cheeseman,
Gracie Speranza,
A. Donnie Mitchell,
Pam West,
Brent Perdue,
Louise Saxton,
Jean Van Osdell,
Sandy Omens,
Ronald Livingston,
Adele Danilus,
Tom Petra,
Dennis Feiler,
and
Kim January.
Okay, so here's the question, Robert.
Yeah.
Either in that story somewhere, there was a guy who had like an amazing laugh. Well, they all have amazing laughs, but there's one particular guy who just had like an outrageous laugh.
This one?
Yeah, that guy. What is it about that kind of laugh that just gets you? Like, what is it about the sound?
The laugh itself.
Yeah. Well, I took that question to somebody who studies acoustics. Love laughing.
Hello.
Hi.
Really, there's somebody who does that?
Yep.
I am Dr. Joanne Bakareski. I'm an associate professor of psychology at Vanderbilt University.
She's from my hometown of Nashville, Tennessee.
And I study the sounds that we make.
She has collected over 30,000 laughs.
Can we hear some?
Yes.
Probably, this is probably the biggest collection in the world. Mm-hmm. She's analyzed everyone on the computer and played me a few.
Okay.
Just little teeny scraps.
But I'll just go ahead and play this for you.
Like this one?
Wait, sorry. Play it one more time. It sounds hysterical. It's like an alien.
But every bit of that laugh, she thinks, has a secret evolutionary purpose. And she breaks it down for me. Starting with that first part of the laugh, the little breathy thing, which in her business she calls a glottal whistle.
See, she's still got this glottal whistle thing going on here.
A glottal whistle. What's that again?
It's the wheeze.
Oh.
Yeah. This is just creating turbulence in her glottis. Mm. It's like there's a storm going on down there.
Now, a lot of people do the wheeze when they laugh.
I do.
Why? It always happens at the beginning of a laugh. Always at the beginning, which makes her think.
That subglottal whistle seems to really say, hey, pay attention to me, and then you get this wonderful sound that follows.
Oh, so the wheeze, she thinks, is like a laugher's gunshot to get you to listen up. Now, the sounds that follow, they jump around a lot in pitch, which again, she thinks has a purpose, considering when we talk, you know, we keep it right here in the middle. I'm Linda Wertheimer. When we laugh, we go up and down. We leap crazy octaves and land on really, really high notes like this.
This sound here, and it's like a mouse squeak.
This note in pitch is actually higher than the highest note in that famously unsingable aria, Queen of the Night.
Really?
You know, this laugh has got so much going on in it.
Acoustically extreme, that's what she calls it.
Acoustically extreme laughter.
Which means that it's hard for our brains to process. And she's seen this on brain scans. We get a little jolt, a little psst, when we hear a laugh that jumps pitches like that.
55 hertz up to 276 hertz in a heartbeat.
So maybe the pitch jumps, maybe the wheeze. These sounds, they're not random, she would argue. They have specifically evolved to tweak us
emotionally. Humans have the ability to produce a sound that makes other people feel good. And so if we can do that, then they're more likely to feel positively towards us and behave positively towards us. Because ultimately, we want to shape their behavior towards us.
What you're saying then is a laugh is a way of the laugher getting into the head of or under the skin of the other person.
Maybe. Just maybe. Studies, in fact, have found that people laugh louder and more extremely around their boss. And over, Joanne has found that women tend to exaggerate their laughs when they're around men that they don't know.
With a stranger male, she is laughing a lot, and she is producing acoustically extreme laughter.
And you can interpret that in a lot of different ways. She interprets it as a safety thing.
The idea being that the male's inherently threatening, so you want to manipulate his emotional state so that he's positively disposed towards her.
But there's another way to sort of interpret that, which is that you're essentially confirming the stereotype of the giggling girl.
Yeah, the giggling girls have power.
Don't I know it?
And on that note, let's end the segment with author Barry Sanders, who in his book, Sudden Glory, writes a lot about this relationship between laughter and power, and laughter as a way to stay safe.
Yeah.
Were there moments, early moments, that you can remember where you felt that acutely?
Oh, absolutely. You can't see them with me, but I can see them in my mind's eye.
Well, paint the picture for me.
Well, you know, there's my father, absolutely, utterly drunk, and he's turning off the lights and turning on the lights in the house with such power that he's breaking the switches, and sparks are flying in the house. you know, sparks are going around in the house. And my mother is crying. And I said, wait, it's Fantasia. Everything's going to turn into color.
Fantasia, I don't get it, though, because of the sparks?
Yeah, because don't you remember in the middle of the movie, it just turns into Technicolor. And there's sparks flying and there's magic wand going and Mickey's starting to touch things and they become vibrant and alive.
Oh.
That's what the house looked like to me. The house looked like Magic Mountain. You know, it was the 4th of July. So I tried to convert it that way with him. And it actually worked. He took a few steps back, looked at the situation, and he cracked up. I mean, I've always thought that anger... In Latin, the root for things like anger and anxiety and angina is a word called anxere, which means to be without air. You know, you start to choke up and you tell someone, hey, take a deep breath. And laughter is about breath, after all. This is what Aristotle tells us. And so that's what would happen. He stopped for a second. His shoulders would go down. He would relax. He would move from out of his throat into his belly and laugh at the situation.
Radiolab will return in a moment.
This is Lizette. Here you go. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Ann and John Herman, celebrating the Breakthrough Collaborative involving middle school students in learning and older students in teaching at breakthroughcollaborative.org. The William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people, online at wtgrantfoundation.org. And the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, committed to helping Americans lead healthier lives and the care they need. On the web at rwjf.org. This is NPR at National Public Radio. Thanks. Have a groovy day.